And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us on the line. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena.
Are you enunciating more or do you just have a better microphone?
Yeah. Kind of both.
A little bit of both. Thank you for joining us this fine Thursday morning. Let's jump into our keyword news portion of the day. We're going to begin with our COVID-19 coverage. This is our first keyword of the day.
Mask rule.
So there are still questions surrounding the outdoor mask mandate amid differing stances between the current and the incoming government. Yesterday, you mentioned that even if rules are implemented or lifted, that it may be subject to change with the new administration. So what's the latest?
Right. Well, An Jo-soo, who has the Yoon Sung-yeol's transition team, he unveiled a plan illustrating how the new administration would handle the recovery phase of the pandemic. And he suggested the outdoor mask rule could be lifted within 30 days of Yoon's inauguration on May 10th. In other words, at the end of the month. Now, that announcement came just after health authorities here currently said they will make a decision tomorrow, in fact. So we'll have to see what that announcement is. Now, Yoon's transition team has repeatedly, though, expressed concerns about dropping the outdoor mask mandate and giving kind of the wrong signal to the public that the pandemic is over. And Ahn noted that Korea still has more infections than other countries. And he added, that's why we can't prepare or compare ourselves to other countries that have lifted outdoor mask mandates, basically saying that Korea is not in a position to do so yet. And he also said the indoor mask mandate will be in place for a while. So it remains to be seen how long, but that's not really in the pipeline for the transition team at the moment. And meanwhile, health official Son Young-nae said authorities haven't yet grasped the announcement made by the transition team, but they said they do believe the direction of the policies is not that different between the two of them. Son said a decision will be made after reviewing different opinions, including those presented by the transition team. So, of course, we won't know anything until they do make an announcement tomorrow.
All right. So An Jo-soo's announcement was all part of the so-called 100-day COVID roadmap. Essentially, it's how they will deal with the recovery phase of this pandemic. What else does the incoming government have planned for the time being then?
Right. Well, the roadmap included a plan to alter the current social distancing measures based on scientific standards, in the words of An Jo-soo. And he noted that rules will be determined by the density of facilities instead of by business type, as it was done in the past. And the Yoon government will support high-risk facilities such as nursing homes and improve their ventilation systems, for one. And also, instead of limiting business hours or closing places down just outright following outbreaks, other solutions like boosting ventilation systems will be provided to ensure that businesses can stay open as much as possible. And Ahn noted or added that the Yoon administration will conduct a study of a representative 10,000 people to look into the after effects of COVID-19, otherwise known as long COVID, and create a support system for that. The limits on compensation for vaccine side effects and deaths will be raised to 50 million won and 100 million won, respectively. Ahn also said the current multi-stage process to get a Paxlovid prescription, the oral COVID-19 pill by Pfizer, will be fast-tracked, in his words, for high-risk groups like the elderly. So some certain differences between the current government and the one that's coming in.
As for fast-tracking the prescription Paxlovid, it seems that time is of the essence when using these oral treatments, right? You're supposed to get treated as soon as you detect the virus, essentially. So the plan is to maybe hand it out ASAP. When the test comes out positive, give it out. Now, logistics is something that they have to answer, too, in order for that to pan out. It seems like, for the time being, there is quite a discrepancy between what the outgoing administration aimed for and what the incoming administration is aiming for as well.
Logistics is a good point that you made, because Korea has been a bit slow in getting these Paxlovid pills. I mean, there's been a bit of criticism saying that there's not enough. So we'll have to see what the new administration comes up with.
All right. And on to our second keyword of the day. Let's take a look at what else is in the pipeline with the incoming administration.
Yoon Biden summit.
So eyes are on President-elect Yoon Sung-yeol's possible summit with U.S. President Joe Biden, saying it will serve as a good opportunity to strengthen the alliance between the two nations. The timing of when that unfolds seems to be diplomatically important as well.
Right, so kind of 99% sure that a summit will actually happen. It is just the date that is kind of in question at the moment. But Yoon Suk-yeol certainly seems to be looking forward to the summit that will happen next month. And he made the remark in his meeting with Edwin Fulner, who is the founder of the U.S. think tank, the Heritage Foundation. He said Biden's upcoming visit to Seoul will be an opportunity to bolster the bilateral alliance in what he called a comprehensive manner. Yoon and Biden are expected to hold their first summit in Seoul around May 20th to the 22nd. Nothing's certain for sure yet. Now, Yoon's remarks suggest he could discuss with Biden ways to bolster the comprehensive strategic alliance of the allies. He also noted that the Heritage Foundation's research has played an important role in shaping policies which could help the South Korea-US alliance as well. Yoon added that the foundation's activities can also serve as a global benchmark. Now, the Heritage Foundation is primarily geared towards public policy. It's more known as a conservative think tank, although Yoon said that it will praise the foundation for kind of leaving political ideologies aside when it does conduct the research. Now, Fulner said it is meaningful that Biden's first Asia trip will be to South Korea, and that his visit comes in the year that marks the 140th anniversary of South Korea-US diplomatic relations. Whether it will be South Korea as the first trip still remains to be seen, but it's certainly pointing to that outcome. Yoon also met Klaus Schwab, who is the founder of the World Economic Forum, for discussions on the Fourth Industrial Revolution Corporation. There's an annual forum that happens in Davos. Yoon appreciated Schwab's visit and the WEF's role in leading the Fourth Industrial Revolution in the world. Earlier in the day, Yoon met with the French ambassador to South Korea, Philippe Lafort, and passed on his congratulations for President Emmanuel Macron's re-election. And they also discussed upgrading Korea-France cooperation on various fronts, including security, politics, economy, and culture. So it's been quite a busy diplomatic schedule for Yoon early on.
All right. And with that, we'll move on to our third keyword of the day.
SK-2.
So,
for those who don't know, it's a cosmetic product.
So SK Group has become Korea's second largest business group in terms of assets, surpassing Hyundai Motor Group. Run us through the details.
Right. Well, the Fair Trade Commission attributed SK's rise to the second spot to its rapidly growing semiconductor and battery businesses, which have boomed, interestingly, more during the pandemic. The FTC also noted that the increase in energy prices helped boost SK Group's business as well. SK's total assets stood at 291 trillion won as of the end of 2021. That's up about 52 trillion won from 2020. The number of SK affiliates also reached 186. I didn't know it was that many, but that is a whopping amount. That's an increase of 38 from last year. During the same period, Hyundai's assets stood at 258 trillion won, up about 11 trillion. And the number of its affiliates stood at 57, up by 4. Samsung Group, of course, held its top position as usual, with total assets just under 484 trillion won. That's up about 6%. Overall, IT firms also moved up the list as well. Kakao and Naver continue to climb on healthy pandemic-related growth. Kakao this year ranked 15th among the chaebols, three notches up on year. Naver now ranks 22nd from 27th. In the case of Kakao, Kakao Bank's and Kakao Pay's public offerings contributed to the increase in assets. And this year, 76 groups in total had consolidated assets over 5 trillion won. That's up by 5. The number of affiliated companies under the 76 chaebol list totaled 2,886. That's up by 274. There were 8 newcomers to the list, including Tunamu, which is the operator of Upbit, the cryptocurrency exchange, as well as Krafton, which created the Battlegrounds game, as well as estate developer Pusong, KG Group, Iljin OK Financial Group, Shinyoung, and Nongshim as well. Mm. And three companies were crossed off the list, IMM Investments, Korea Investment and Securities, and Taewoo E&C.
All right, and with that, on to our fourth keyword of the day.
Staying put.
Recent data in the country shows that the number of South Koreans who moved to different residences in the country plunged to the lowest level in 47 years in March. So we're moving less. This is due, apparently, according to this analysis, rapid aging and fewer housing transactions overall.
That's right. Well, there's a lot of reasons behind the fewer housing transactions as well. But of course, that's tied into the issue of people not moving as much as they used to. And Statistics Korea data shows that 587,000 Koreans moved house last month. That's down about 20% on year. The tally marked the lowest for any March since 1975. And it's the steepest on year fall since a 31% fall in March 1972. Population mobility, as it's known, also slid for the 15th straight month in March as well. Some of the reasons for people choosing to stay put is low birth rates and rapid aging. Mm. That just changes the demographics of the country because a lot more older people tend to stay put to where they are living. Now, the number of people in their 20s and 30s subsequently who tend to move more often has been on the decline. Housing transactions also decline as house prices have recently swung to a kind of a downward trend due to rising interest rates and tighter lending rules. That's more bad news for people who are investing, but house prices are still more expensive for people who just simply want to move house for living. Mm. The population mobility rate, which is the percentage of those relocating per 100 people, reached 13.4% in March. That's down about 3.5 percentage points on year. Seoul and eight other cities and provinces posted a net population outflow, meaning more people are moving out of those places. Incheon and seven other cities and provinces recorded a net inflow. So we've kind of seen this trend where more and more people are leaving the capital because it's just getting too expensive to live there. Mm-mm.
Especially the young generation, it seems. If the initial expenses of trying to buy a house is deemed unaffordable, what other option do they have than to relocate away from the capital city? Yeah. All right. We can do an entire two-hour series on that, but it's keyword news after all. So we're going to move
It's kind of a similar situation that's happening, has happened in England, in fact, where I have lived for most of my life. A lot of people tend to live on the outskirts of the busy parts of the city, and it gets more expensive as you go more
towards
central,
the center.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's the same for most metropolitan cities across the world. Mm. For New York City, it's quite similar. For San Francisco, where I grew up nearby, it's quite similar as well.
There you go.
Similar trends being spotted all elsewhere across the globe as well. Would you have a solution? Absolutely not, which is why we're going to move on to our fifth keyword of the day. This is our North Korea coverage.
Showing off missiles.
So North Korea's recent military parade showed off some of the regime's latest weapons. South Korea and the U.S. are keeping close tabs on them, and the likelihood the regime will test them soon. It seems like Kim Jong-un is more inclined to show off their military capabilities for a number of different reasons.
That's right. So there's further concerns that more weapons tests will be coming, especially after Kim Jong-un vowed to strengthen his country's nuclear force at the fastest possible speed. Now, the parade featured the Hwasong-17, its largest known ICBM that North Korea claims to have tested last month. And North Korea also showed off what it refers to as a hypersonic missile. This weapon, tested earlier this year as well, has a maneuverable warhead that makes it more difficult to intercept. But analysts say it does not likely fly at faster speeds than any ballistic missiles as well. The only new weapon really unveiled at the parade appeared to be a solid fuel SLBM, which analysts said appeared slightly longer than previous versions. And Seoul and Washington officials have continuously expected North Korea to soon conduct another long-range missile launch or even a nuclear test as well. And we'll just have to see what happens in the coming months.
All right. Thank you very much, Aaron, for all the coverage this morning. We'll speak to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.